It's time for Gervie's Law, the intersection of law and life, with your host, injury compensation attorney, author, and mentor, Alan Gervie. Alan is managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan Gervie and Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm who have represented injured workers for over 35 years. Joined today by his co-host, radio personality, and television host, Carrie Kasem. Carrie brings a fresh, real perspective to the intersection of law and life, turning Murphy's Law upside down. And now, here are Alan Gervie and Carrie Kasem.
Good afternoon, Los Angeles, and everyone listening all over the world on KABC.com. I am Alan Gervie. I'm the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan Gervie and Wynn, and today, as usual, I am here on this fine Saturday afternoon to be the managing partner of your life. And Carrie Kasem was supposed to be here with me, but 48 Hours, the CBS television show, is doing a special on Gene Kasem and Carrie Kasem, the battle over the wrongful death lawsuit that Carrie and her brother and sister have filed against Gene for her husband, Casey Kasem. And 48 Hours is interviewing Carrie today. They were at our show just 2 days ago. We taped show with Jose Baez, attorney for Aaron Hernandez, football player, of course, who killed himself in jail, and we'll be airing that show very shortly. But 48 Hours did the whole thing. We put the makeup on. It looked great. Carrie looked wonderful, as she always does. And today, we are without her, unfortunately. She will be back next week when we have Robert Shapiro on the show. We're going to talk O.J. Simpson. Robert Shapiro, of course, is O.J.'s lawyer, was O.J.'s lawyer, amongst other people. And today we have a great show you don't want to miss. I am really privileged right now to have with me Genevieve Wong. Genevieve is our producer, and she has been doing a special project. She's working on American Chaos. That is a documentary that is coming out in about 10 days. It's by James D. Stern, who is the director and the producer. And Genevieve, welcome to Gervie's Law. It's so great to have you on the mic versus behind the scenes.
Well, I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, of course, we would have you. Tell us a little bit about what we're going to talk about in the second half hour with American Chaos, James D. Stern, the documentary that's getting a lot of buzz. You know, we had RBG, the director and producer, on the show. We talked to them. They're an Academy Award favorite, as well as Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. But tell us about James D. Stern's film.
Well, as you know, this week has been an incredible week for Donald Trump. I mean, it's been a brutal week.
Yeah.
No matter which side you stand on, I mean, no one can deny that. Paul Manafort, Trump's former campaign manager, was found guilty of financial crimes. And then there's Michael Cohen, his personal lawyer, who also pled guilty to multiple crimes. I mean, in the spirit of Trump, we are going to be speaking to filmmaker James D. Stern, who's going to come on to talk about his film, American Chaos. It's a Sony documentary. There's a lot of Oscar buzz. And
well, why don't you tell us, just to give people a little bit of a hint about what James D. Stern did. He actually toured the red states before the election, talking to Trump supporters, and we're going to hear about that a little bit later. Genevieve, it's great to have you here, but right now we want to introduce to you just a really interesting, interesting person. She is really something. She has been called an eloquent activist for the world's downtrodden and disenfranchised. She was also called the most open, unstuffy lawyer. And we have so many lawyers on this show who are stuffy, and we're going to have one who is unstuffy. You know, she was a Rhodes Scholar. She works for Doughty Street Chambers in London, one of Amal Clooney's best friends, and she works there as well. Brilliant, brilliant lawyer. And what is she known for right now, other than all of the great work that she's doing for the downtrodden? She's Julian Assange's attorney, the WikiLeaks founder, who she says is incredibly principled and fascinating. Jen Robinson, welcome to Gervie's Law.
Thank you for having me on the show.
It's great to have you. We got to ask you, what do you need this stress with Julian Assange, with everything that you've accomplished and the Rhodes Scholarship and the firm? You got so many things going on. Isn't it stressful representing Julian Assange?
Well, it's I think as a lawyer, it's only relative to what your client's going through, and it's something that I think has been an incredibly, yes, incredibly stressful, but far more stressful for the client and for the person who has spent, you know, more than 8 years, effectively under some forms of restrictions on his liberty without charge. And so in those circumstances, I think it's always important as a lawyer, yes, we think about how it is for us, but of course we're more concerned about what's going on for our client. And for Julian Assange, it's been a very difficult time.
Certainly it has, and I know recently you've spoken about his health. He is holed up at the Ecuador Embassy in London, and you're in London. You have occasion to see him, to see how he's doing, even though he has been cut off from the internet, reportedly, and seeing his ex-wife and son. How is he doing health-wise?
We are very concerned about his physical and mental well-being, given the very long period of time he's now spent in what is effectively solitary confinement. So he sought asylum in the Ecuadorian embassy in 2012, and the embassy, through no fault of its own, doesn't have the facilities to allow him to be able to be outside in the sunshine to exercise. So he's been inside a building, inside a flat for more than 6 years.
Wow.
So this is inevitably going to have a damaging impact upon his health. Now, as you mentioned, in the last 4 to 5 months, he's been cut off from the internet, and that really, and visitors, which has had a really, I think, marked impact upon his ability to engage with the world, and is really effectively, even Human Rights Watch has said, it's effectively solitary confinement. But that speaks to the seriousness of the case, and his concern about the risk of extradition to the United States. So, you know, throughout the Obama administration, I think people didn't want to believe that the Obama administration would go for a publisher. But there's been a grand jury going on since 2010. We know from Australian diplomatic cables it is the largest in size and a large in size and scale, unprecedented in size and scale. He's a publisher who engages in the same First Amendment-protected activity that other publishers engage in, and yet has been the subject of a criminal investigation in the U.S., which was started under the Obama administration, and more recently, with the sounds we're getting from the Trump administration, seems to us only more concerning. We've had Mike Pompeo, now Secretary of State, when he was the director of the CIA, say that they were going to take WikiLeaks down and that Julian Assange would be prosecuted, prosecuting him was a priority, and they wouldn't give him the benefit of the First Amendment. We've since heard Jeff Sessions say that prosecuting him is a priority. And I think we need to ask a question in America, which is respected and I think has a proud history of free speech, what this means for free speech in the US and what precedent this is setting, that we have a publisher in a Western democracy who has been under these forms of restrictions for such a long time, and that the United States would consider prosecuting a publisher in this way. And I mean, it's not just my concern. We've had the in-house counsel for the New York Times, Dave McCraw, speak very openly and fervently about what he sees as the inability of the Department of Justice to distinguish between what WikiLeaks does and what the New York Times does, and what that precedent would mean for journalists across the United States and indeed around the world, because we're looking at a situation where the United States is seeking to exercise jurisdiction over journalists and publishers outside of the jurisdiction, to bring them into the jurisdiction and not allow them to benefit from constitutional protection. So I think it's a very, very serious situation.
Well, no doubt about that, Jennifer. But don't you think that it comes down to the means by which the journalism, and I'll put that in quotes, takes place? Because what you talk about, the First Amendment protections, of course, this country in America and around the world, hopefully, will respect First Amendment protections. However, when you look at the means by which you obtain the information, I think that's what people have problems with. So when you look at it as his lawyer, as Mr. Assange's lawyer, do you see anything that he has done that has breached the law, whether it's the Espionage Act of 1917 or any other law in this country?
No, the short answer is that journalists receive information from confidential sources and publish that information all the time. That includes information that has come from restricted sources. It includes information that's come from intelligence sources. It includes information that has been leaked by people who are in a position where they have obligations to protect that information, but it is in the public interest to reveal it. Now, this happens all the time in newsrooms across the country, and WikiLeaks does no different. They do not hack information. They publish merely what they receive, provided they can verify the information is what it appears to be, and they publish it. So as Dave McCraw said to New York Times Council, this happens all the time. This is public interest journalism. And if there is to be any concern raised about this, then national security journalism itself is at risk.
And what about defense as a truth being a defense to this? Because I know you've said in the past, and I've read about it, that if it's true, if what has been leaked, so to speak, is actual truth and can be factually proven, then where is the crime?
Well, precisely. WikiLeaks has been recognized for, has received awards the world over for journalism and for the contribution that these leaks have made. Whether, I mean, I know that there's a lot of concern in the US at the moment around the US election publications and the ongoing Russian investigation. But if we look back to what WikiLeaks has revealed, they revealed war crimes, human rights abuse, torture. Amnesty International has said that WikiLeaks contributed to the Arab Spring because of the publications that were put about. Their material has been used by human rights lawyers the world over and is now admissible in courts around the world, including in the UK Supreme Court, including in the European Court of Human Rights. And that information has been essential in helping us, lawyers like me, to be able to seek accountability for crimes and for human rights abuse. That's made a massive contribution to the public interest,
right. Just
like journalists do all the time. And it's important for us to understand if we're to make, you know, this is a classic free speech argument, if we're to make informed democratic choices about our governments, then we ought to know what they're doing. And governments have an interest in maintaining control over information, and it's important that information that demonstrates government corruption, government crime.
Right.
And that ought to be revealed. It's in the public interest for the public to understand that.
You know, Jen, a lot of people agree with that thought process, but there are others who say if you're putting at risk U.S. lives or putting at risk counterterrorism operatives, then there should be a stop made to the leak of that kind of information. I want to address that. We have to take a break. We're talking to Jennifer Robinson. She's a human rights lawyer, Australian-born Rhodes Scholar with Doughty, Street & Chambers, and attorney for Julian Assange. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on KABC. We will be right back.
If you or someone you know is struggling with addiction, please call this toll-free number right now. 800-390-9528. That's 800-390-9528. By calling your addiction team, you're taking the first steps to recovery. The help you need could be one call away. 800-390-9528. Make the free call now. 800-390-9528. Your addiction team is a third-party advertiser for various treatment centers and placement networks. Individual results will vary. Visit youraddictionteam.com/turns for more information.
This is John Greenhut, and if your teeth are stained from coffee, tea, or smoking, Power Swabs is the answer. In 5 minutes, you'll see 2 shades whiter teeth, and in 7 days, 6 shades. Even better, there's no messy strips or trays that you have to leave in your mouth for an hour. Just swab your teeth for 5 minutes, and you're done. To try Power Swabs, call 1-800-679-0969. Your bright white smile will have your friends talking about how great you look. Try it risk-free. 1-800-679-0969. That's 1-800-679-0969. This is John Greenhut, and if your teeth are stained from coffee, tea, or smoking, Power Swabs is the answer. In 5 minutes, you'll see 2 shades whiter teeth, and in 7 days, 6 shades. Even better, there's no messy strips or trays that you have to leave in your mouth for an hour. Just swab your teeth for 5 minutes, and you're done. To try Power Swabs, call 1-800-679-0969. Your bright white smile will have your friends talking about how great you look. Try it risk-free. 1-800-679-0969. That's 1-800-679-0969.
Every home is unique. That's why I, the Orkin man, rely on science.
Mom! Orkin is here!
Hi. We have a rodent problem.
Rodents do like to find a comfortable home, and even if you get rid of them once, they're great at finding their way back in.
Mom! Soda!
Especially if there's a good source of food.
And a slice of pizza!
But using the latest research and exclusion techniques, I'll customize a treatment for your home that'll send them packing.
Don't forget the ranch this time!
We still talking about rodents?
Orkin. Pest control down to a science. Visit Orkin.com for a free estimate.
Welcome back to Gervie's Law, turning Murphy's Law upside down on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Yeah, we're rocking out here with Jennifer Robinson, She's a barrister in London, and she's calling us from London. We're talking about Julian Assange. And before the break, Jen, we talked about balancing the interests of information getting out to the public, which I think we all think we deserve to know and want to know, versus putting people at risk or putting counterterrorism, for instance, at risk. How do you address that? And I'm sure you've been asked that a lot representing Mr. Assange.
Well, I mean, the first thing to note is that there was a huge amount of discussion in 2010 when WikiLeaks started publishing the U.S. diplomatic cables. And the constant messaging from the United States at that time was he would have blood on his hands and people were going to you know, be killed as a result of the publication. Now, let's not forget that newspapers the world over published that material. But we heard from the Chelsea Manning proceedings that there was no evidence that anybody had been harmed. And as James Risen has said, who's a very well-respected New York Times journalist, there are many instances in which the government often over-exaggerates the risk to national security. For example, the fact that the New York Times was convinced to sit on a story about the fact that they were wiretapping all Americans prior to Bush's second election.
Right.
Now, that information was in the public interest, and they sat on it because they were concerned about security, national security concerns, because that's what the government was saying. And James Risen himself, who was a journalist in the story, looks back on that and really questions the decision to withhold that publication at the time they did, because he actually, in his view, that governments often say that it's going to cause damage to national security, when in fact it's going to cause an embarrassment. And it's a fine editorial judgment to determine when that is. Now, as a lawyer, I will always defend newspapers, editors, journalists and publishers' decisions in the public interest to publish material, and of course that has to be done responsibly. But we've seen time and time again that there are instances in which material has been published against the government's wishes and we haven't seen the consequences flow. And there are also instances where newspapers have sat on stories because of those concerns, and we wonder what the political ramifications might have been had they made the decision to publish. So I think these are difficult questions, but of course WikiLeaks, like other organizations, does consider this in their publication policy.
Interestingly, Jen, you talk about political considerations, and people have said, well, is this political? When we talk about Julian Assange and WikiLeaks, there have been leaks about Russia and on behalf of Russia. There have been leaks about the Democratic Party, perhaps Republicans as well. Do you see Julian Assange, your client, being political in this way? Is he trying to only leak certain things that will help certain people, or is he an equal opportunity leaker?
He's absolutely an equal opportunity leaker. WikiLeaks publishes what they receive, so they don't determine what material comes in. They simply receive it, make an analysis of whether, verify the information, and then make an analysis of whether it is in the public interest to publish it, i.e., or whether it's newsworthy. Now, newspapers all the time make decisions about that's just to say that they publish what they receive and they can't determine what they receive. So
yeah.
If you were to talk about the U.S. elections, for example, WikiLeaks very publicly called for people to release information about Trump's tax returns,
right,
and information about Trump. And they would have, had they received that information, they would absolutely have published it. And there's also questions about sort of, to say that there was a leak on behalf of Russia. WikiLeaks, Julian has made very clear that it was not a state source that they received the information from in relation to the DNC, and indeed no evidence has been adduced to suggest otherwise. So newspapers receive confidential source material all the time. They don't know who it's come from, but they'll publish it if they can verify it. And indeed, that is the entire point of the WikiLeaks system, which many news organisations have adopted since. The anonymous Dropbox system is specifically designed so that you don't know who your source is. So the important important fact to consider is the information accurate and is it newsworthy? And if so, then newspapers and WikiLeaks would publish it.
I think
it's really important to understand that.
And don't you think that we've kind of lost sight of journalism now? When you talk about the different information that's come to WikiLeaks and what they've released, we don't see that necessarily on CNN or on Fox News because there's such an angle that they're pursuing.
Well, I mean, you don't always see it attributed to WikiLeaks, but WikiLeaks material is used in reporting all the time. And I do think that they have introduced a really important model, which has been adopted by a number of different news organizations, and they continue to publish really important information. So I do think that WikiLeaks has introduced a model that has changed the way that we think about journalism. I think it's been important in the way, simply by reference to the fact that it's been adopted by so many different organisations. But, I mean, they are still publishing and they're doing really important work. They've published on a range of subjects and about different states as well. So I think there's the common thing, and you referenced it in your earlier question, which is, well, it's anti-American or it's pro-Russian or it's this or it's that. I mean, Julian's been accused of everything from being a Mossad agent to a Russian agent. I mean, it all depends on the particular publication at the time, but what's clear is that WikiLeaks has published material about Russia,
right.
Has revealed information about Russia. They've published information about Saudi Arabia. They've published information about Syria. They have published information about countries across the political spectrum. And it all comes down to what's in the public interest and what they receive. And I think it's worth going and having a look on the WikiLeaks website, because I think people forget the sheer wealth of information and the breadth of subject matter that they've released information on.
Now, Jen, let's talk a little bit about Julian Assange and his future. You're an expert on extradition law. You're an expert on international law, media law, freedom of speech, freedom of information. Tell us a little bit about what he's facing, because we read all about the fact that maybe Ecuador won't protect him any longer. Maybe he'll be extradited if he comes to the U.S. Maybe there's a sealed grand jury indictment already waiting for him. What's really happening?
Well, this case has been going on for a long time, since 2010, when I first started acting for Julian and for WikiLeaks. So there was a grand jury investigation opened in relation to WikiLeaks publications back in 2010, and that was in relation to the Afghan war logs, the Iraq war logs, and ongoing around the publication of Cablegate, the U.S. diplomatic cables. Now, those stories were, of course, in the public interest, demonstrating that the U.S. government had not disclosed to the U.S. public the extent of the civilian casualties in
right.
both of those wars, which I think are important facts, let alone the rest of the material that came out. For many years, Julian was fighting extradition to Sweden in relation to a matter that has since been dropped. That case, in our view, has been an abusive process and was dragged out in ways that were completely unacceptable. That case has now gone away.
You're talking about the sexual assault case in Sweden.
That's correct, the allegations in Sweden.
And you don't think that will be reopened if Sweden has a chance to prosecute?
No, we understand the case is closed, and that because they've taken his testimony and they've made a decision to close that case. So that is over. The outstanding matters that are before us at the moment are, first, the ongoing criminal investigation in the United States. We know that has been going on since 2010, and we are very concerned about that fact, given what I said earlier about what figures in the Trump administration have been saying about WikiLeaks and about Julian Assange and the fact that it's a priority to prosecute him. Now, that is the reason that he went inside the embassy in 2012. That is the reason he was granted asylum by Ecuador. And the basis for his asylum, because of the sounds we're hearing from the United States, it's only more important that that protection continues. So if he were to leave the embassy, he would need to face, there's some outstanding matters in the UK about bail conditions and the fact that he sought asylum inside the embassy.
Right.
And we are very concerned that if he is to leave without an assurance against extradition to the United States, that once he's taken into custody, that the US would make a request for his extradition. And of course, then that would be another long extradition challenge.
Jen, is that his biggest fear at this point, the extradition to the US? Or,
this case.
Go ahead.
Sorry, this case is and always has been about the concern about risk of extradition to the United States. And that's both a concern for his well-being and security, and the fact that the broader concern about the implications that would have for all publishers and journalists. That's what I'm talking about. The precedent that would be set for journalists, which will apply to other journalists in the United States, and certainly in the context of the Trump administration, I think many, many journalists and newspapers are under no illusion that if the precedent that would be set against WikiLeaks would absolutely be used against them. And so that is what this case is about. It's what it's always been about, and it's been the key driver behind, first, the decision for him to seek asylum, and the fact that he remained inside that embassy despite it being an incredibly difficult circumstance.
If you looked into a crystal ball, and we only have a few more minutes, what would you say, and I know I'm not going to hold you to it, what's going to happen with Julian Assange, and where's it going to go from here?
Look, if someone had asked me in 2010 when I first started representing him if I thought I would expect to be having to visit him inside the Ecuadorian embassy 6 years later,
wow,
8 years later we now are, that Donald Trump would be the president of the United States, I would not have believed them. But here we are. So I don't know where this case is going to end, but what I can certainly say is what we would, where we would like to see it end, and that is that there is an assurance against his extradition, that the United States drops the criminal investigation and respects its own constitution, and that Julian can leave the embassy and continue on with his work. Now, we've been waiting for that outcome for 8 years. And if I look back to 2010, I remember a conversation I had with Julian, and I think it's probably a nice way to finish the show, which is he told me after the Iraq war logs released that he had these diplomatic cables and was going to publish them. And he said to me, I know the United States is going to chase me to the end of the earth. They're going to make my life hell. But I have to do it because it's in the public interest and the public deserves to know this information. It's my duty. It's my duty to make this information public. And he did so knowing that there would be serious consequences, and it hadn't registered to me just how serious those consequences have been. We've seen him cut off from WikiLeaks finances, cut off. We've seen him inside the embassy for more than 8 years. We've seen a widespread campaign to vilify him and to undermine the work of WikiLeaks. And yet he continues. And I think it's important that people, I think the media coverage about Julian Assange and WikiLeaks, I think is very unfair, not always accurate. And it's important to remember that fact, that WikiLeaks makes information available to the public because it's in the public interest. It is for our benefit. And I just hope that more people remember that and think about that when they think about, you know, what's happening inside the Ecuadorian embassy in London.
Jen, I got to tell you, when I first started talking to you today, I asked you, what do you need this stress for with Julian Assange? That answer that you just gave answered it. That's it. That's why you can withstand the stress. That's why you're willing to deal with it, because of what you just said about Julian Assange and what you're standing up for. And I appreciate that. Maybe it took us a little while to get there, but that's where it is. That's what a human rights lawyer does when they are defending someone who may not be that popular with everyone around the world. Jennifer?
Well, you know what? I just would also like to say that Julian Assange is incredibly popular in countries outside of the US, the UK. When I travel to Mexico, Pakistan, the Philippines, Indonesia, he's seen as a hero. And it's a very different perspective in other countries. And I think that's worth remembering as well. But thank you very much for your time.
Yeah, Jennifer, we really appreciate it. Good luck with your representation and good luck at Doughty Street and Chambers, your law firm. We appreciate you spending some time with us this Saturday afternoon. Jennifer Robinson, Julian Assange's lawyer, human rights lawyer. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC. We will be right back.
Talk Radio 790 KABC News Update. I'm Steve Cumming. Federal officials say Hawaii residents should not let their guard down now that the once powerful Hurricane Lane that threatened the island state has become a tropical storm. FEMA Director Brock Long says tropical storms themselves can still be very dangerous. As the circle of friends around President Trump begins to unravel, there's more talk of impeachment. Congressman Denny Hecht says,
"This is the highest caliber of professional. In Bob Mueller, I trust, and I think the best thing that could happen for our constitutional form of government is for him to be allowed to complete his investigation."
And Democrats today enacted one of the most significant changes to the way superdelegates operate at their national convention by considerably limiting their ability to vote on the first ballot for the party's presidential nominee beginning in 2020. KABC SoCal weather, sunny this afternoon with highs from the mid to upper 70s at the beaches to the lower to mid 80s inland. More news coming up and continuous coverage on KABC.com. I'm Steve Cumming, Talk Radio 790, KABC News.
Have you or someone you know been injured on the job? Rowan Gervey and Wynn Lawyers understand that physical and emotional workplace injuries severely impact your life. You have rights when injured at work, but you need an advocate to avoid getting lost in the red tape of a broken system. Rowan Gervey and Wynn Lawyers fully understand the complex workers' compensation system and will protect your rights if you've been injured on the job. RGW lawyers won't give up when the insurance company fails you, and they have years of experience with catastrophic injuries like brain injuries, strokes, chemical exposure, cancers, and death. RGW lawyers are compassionate and aggressive with over 40 years of advocacy for the rights of injured workers and have helped people change their lives with some of the largest settlements in California. You need someone in your corner if you're suffering from a work-related injury. Rowan Gervey and Wynn Lawyers will fight to get you the medical treatment you need. A workplace injury can happen at any time. Put this number in your phone now. 855-4-RGW-LAW. 855-4-RGW-LAW or go to rgwlawfirm.com. Executive LA Limousine Service has been in business for 40 years, serving corporate clients and all their social events. Call 310-823-LIMO or visit executivela.com to book this five-star review company. Call 310-823-LIMO or visit executivela.com. Mention or enter KABC AM and get 15% discount while offer lasts. That's KABC AM, 15% discount while offer lasts.
This is John Greenhut, and if your teeth are stained from coffee, tea, or smoking, Power Swabs is the answer. In 5 minutes, you'll see 2 shades whiter teeth, and in 7 days, 6 shades. Even better, there's no messy strips or trays that you have to leave in your mouth for an hour. Just swab your teeth for 5 minutes, and you're done. To try Power Swabs, call 1-800-679-0969. Your bright white smile will have your friends talking about how great you look. Try it risk-free. 1-800-679-0969. That's 1-800-679-0969.
Welcome back to Gervey's Law, turning Murphy's Law upside down on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Yeah, we're back. I'm Alan Gervey. Carrie Kasem is out today. She's working on 48 Hours. There will be a special on her and her stepmom. Her favorite, Jean Kasem, and she's working on that. What a great interview with Jennifer Robinson.
Amazing.
Genevieve, thanks
Amazing.
For getting her. Genevieve Wong, who's with us, is our producer, and she's sitting in very nicely. Thank you so much for doing this with Carrie being absent today. And, representing Julian Assange cannot be easy. I'm sure she's had her own threats against her and her well-being, but she is definitely committed, very young, energetic attorney in London. Rhodes Scholar, Amal Clooney's best friend. She was at
same
her wedding.
Same firm.
So, they are doing some really, incredible work for people who apparently, need a lot of help. And, she talked about Trump and the presidential campaign and the WikiLeaks with Julian Assange. And Genevieve, you've been working on this story, American Chaos, which is a documentary that's coming out very soon in the next couple of weeks. And it chronicles, James D. Stern, who's the director of the documentary. And it's gotten such great press. People are really enthusiastic, excited to see it. He traveled through the red states to interview Trump supporters prior to the election for 6 months and really learned some interesting things. And anyone who wants to know where we are now, a couple years later, really has to see this documentary to see where we came from to get to where we are. Genevieve?
I agree. It's definitely a movie that I think liberals and conservatives will enjoy.
Yeah.
I know that after watching it, you know, I had some questions of my own. I'm pretty excited to ask them.
All right. Well, let's bring James D. Stern on. Jim, what an accomplishment making American Chaos. Welcome to Gervey's Law.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me, and I look forward to answering whatever questions I can.
Yeah, a lot of people have questions because I think that what you show in the film is perhaps you were as astonished as everyone else. You saw so much of what was going on prior to the election and maybe understood it a little better than people who were more shocked, especially in this state, California, of the results.
Yes, I think that, you know, I started on the movie really because all my friends were kind of rooting for Trump to win the nomination on the basis that he was going to be the easiest Republican to beat.
Right.
I felt very much not that way. I felt nervous about it. And I felt that there was something going on that people weren't really seeing. Even my, you know, my daughter was, you know, thinking that I was sort of crazy, but I felt like, that there was something building, and I wanted to get, a much better sense of what that was than people around me had.
All right. Now, I know you traveled to a lot of red states. You went to places like Arizona, West Virginia, but I saw the film. You started your documentary in Florida. I mean, why did you start there?
I started in Florida because Mar-a-Lago is Trump's home. So it seemed like the likeliest place to start and to sort of discover what was building around him, who he was, why people were so devoted to him. And also, Florida had such a checkered history from hanging chads, you know, on, that it seemed like, you know, all sort of paths kind of in presidential elections lately led to Florida. So it seemed like, the perfect place to start for both those reasons.
Now, you mentioned in the film that Bobby Kennedy is one of your big heroes. You're a lifelong liberal. Was it hard for you to play yourself off as a neutral when you did these interviews?
Yes, it was. I heard some things that made me want to jump out of my skin, but I feel very, very strongly, felt very strongly then, feel very strongly now, that if we're not going to listen and try and absorb what people are saying, then we're going to be in such a divided place that nothing was going to get done, and people were just going to be in their own echo chamber. And so the idea, the premise of the movie was to try and get out of that echo chamber, despite my own strongly held views.
You know, you acknowledge that you're a political junkie, and you acknowledge that you had some concerns going into this election, but you ended up making this film. A lot of people are political junkies. A lot of people are filmmakers. A lot of people have concerns or had concerns about the election. How did you motivate yourself to actually put this together? Because you did it fairly quickly, and I'm sure it wasn't easy.
No, it was really not easy. It was really just myself and my cameraman and DP, you know, going around the country as somebody who, Kevin Ford, who I didn't even know before we started and became such a dear friend in this process. I think the fact that my brother, Todd Stern, was working for Obama for 7.5 years on climate change was a real motivator. The fact that I have a very politically oriented daughter, and son, was another motivator. So, and I felt like this was a story that people were going to miss. And I was watching, you know, cable, you know, television all the time. And again, I was not seeing people who were trying to understand each other. I was just hearing people who were simply repeating their own talking points, regardless of what anybody else was saying. So that was the motivator.
Now, you at one point, you know, you didn't think that Trump would win the election, but then you attended the Republican National Convention in Cleveland. Can you tell me what that was like and how it was a pivotal moment for you?
Yeah. Well, you know, I went there and I was supposed to have credentials, and in fact, the credentials fell through. So I arranged for people to borrow credentials and got in for just 20 minutes, 4 hours before the convention. Found out that there were not actually any reserved seats in one section. So the cameraman and I sat down there, pretended we had credentials, and did not move for the next 8 hours. So that's how I got in. When you are there and people are chanting, "Lock her up, build a wall," and it's beginning to feel more and more like a Roman Colosseum with gladiators and lions, it tends to stress you a bit, especially if you feel like you're not one of the lions. So it was, you know, I felt that people were so driven and passionate, and that Hillary's supporters were much more intellectual and in their head. And at the end of the day, in politics, like in so many things, sports also, passion trumps politics. I mean, it's passion trumps, intellectual. So that really gave me real pause.
But don't you think through making this film that you recognized that there were issues outside of Mr. Trump's personality and outside of, the obvious issues with him and how he behaves? But don't you think that you acknowledge it in the film, immigration, for instance, a lot of people saying, and I think it says it in the film, you know, you lock your doors at home. Why can't we lock our borders and jobs? People not having a job for 2 years and saying we need to get more jobs. Wasn't there an aspect of what we would consider perhaps different policies from the Democrats, but real policies nevertheless, regardless of who Mr. Trump is?
Absolutely. 100% right. I feel like one of the things that, you know, I sort of kept coming back to is you need to have empathy for people's issues, even if you don't have sympathy for their solutions. And I thought that the biggest eye-opener for me was in Arizona with people talking about immigration from their perspective, which was people coming across the border in the middle of the night, traipsing across their property, and the fear that is incumbent in that. And that's a real thing. And I think it's also a real thing in West Virginia when someone's, you know, been out of work for 2 years and they looked at Trump as this, you know, in their minds, uber successful businessman. They didn't look at him as somebody who had not paid blue collar workers throughout his career and had 3,500 lawsuits against him as a result of it. They didn't look at that side of it. And so what they looked at is this is a man who could solve their issues and who spoke to them like they wanted to be spoken to and gave them respect. And I think that that's and spoke to them from the heart in a way and
right.
from a kind of and they had an emotional response. All of that had to be taken into consideration. I mean that's not it's really important that, you know, to know that, you know, I didn't go out there and think these people were crazy because they weren't and they aren't. They had, you know, they have a point of view. It's not my point of view, but it's a point of view that has to be acknowledged, and I think that
yeah.
and I think it has to be discussed.
And in a democracy, that's exactly what the underpinnings of a democracy is, free speech and the First Amendment. Jim, we want to talk a lot more about the film after the break. We want to talk about its release and where people can see it. We'll do that in a couple minutes. You're listening to Gervie's Law. I'm Alan Gervie. I'm here with Genevieve Wong. What a pleasure. Right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
Have you or someone you know been injured on the job? Rowan Gervie and Wynn Lawyers understand that physical and emotional workplace injuries severely impact your life. You have rights when injured at work, but you need an advocate to avoid getting lost in the red tape of a broken system. Rowan Gervie and Wynn Lawyers fully understand the complex workers' compensation system and will protect your rights if you've been injured on the job. RGW Lawyers won't give up when the insurance company fails you, and they have years of experience with catastrophic injuries like brain injuries, strokes, chemical exposure, cancers, and death. RGW Lawyers are compassionate and aggressive with over 40 years of advocacy for the rights of injured workers and have helped people change their lives with some of the largest settlements in California. You need someone in your corner if you're suffering from a work-related injury. Rowan Gervie and Wynn Lawyers will fight to get you the medical treatment you need. A workplace injury can happen at any time. Put this number in your phone now. 855-4-RGW-LAW. 855-4-RGW-LAW or go to rgwlawfirm.com.
Are you looking for an alternative to drug and alcohol rehabilitation that allows you to recover in the privacy of your own home with an individualized program? The Keylight Company's Concierge Detox LA can be that alternative. Headed by Dr. Damon Raskin, addiction specialist, and clinical psychologist Dr. Howard Gless, Concierge Detox LA can meet your recovery needs. For more information, contact Concierge Detox LA at 323-935-9712. That's 323-935-9712.
This is John Greenhut, and if your teeth are stained from coffee, tea, or smoking, Power Swabs is the answer. In 5 minutes, you'll see 2 shades whiter teeth, and in 7 days, 6 shades. Even better, there's no messy strips or trays that you'll have to leave in your mouth for an hour. Just swab your teeth for 5 minutes, and you're done. To try Power Swabs, call 1-800-679-0969. Your bright white smile will have your friends talking about how great you look. Try it risk-free. 1-800-679-0969. That's 1-800-679-0969.
Welcome back to Gervie's Law, turning Murphy's Law upside down on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Yeah, we're back on this fine Saturday afternoon. I'm Alan Gervie. We're talking to James D. Stern. The movie is called American Chaos. It will be coming out soon. And Jim Stern has been a successful producer-director for many years. All the Rage, Looper, Selfless. There are a lot of films that he's been involved with. And he has come up with a political venture here with American Chaos, detailing the Trump election. And he said in the first segment, Genevieve, Jim was talking about how he's liberal, Democrat, and it had to have been hard, Jim, to be doing this film, seeing what happened, and eventually seeing that Trump actually got election. In fact, didn't you cry on election night?
I was hoping you wouldn't bring that up. Yes, I do.
Why? It just shows you you're a real person. Crying is natural. It's expressing feelings.
Yeah, sorry. That's one. That's a good spin at any rate. But it also, was an emotional experience for me, given the fact that my brother had worked on climate change for 7.5 years, going all over the world doing that, and I really felt like his work was going to get upset and upended, and that's one of the many issues that I feel really passionate about. So yes, it was an upsetting night.
Did you at any point experience Stockholm syndrome by any chance?
Absolutely. That's a great question. The answer is yes. I mean, you're with people. By the way, you really like the people you're with, and you feel you're very isolated. And you start feeling like, maybe I'm the crazy one. Maybe
you're in the minority.
Maybe I'm in the minority. Maybe they have a really good point here, And so I found that I would shoot for, 4 or 5 days and then have to come back and sort of in touch base with, my home and my
I know what you're going to say. You had to go to dinner with your liberal friends to remind yourself what your values were.
Exactly right.
Now, you interviewed close to two dozen people. I mean, who do you think was the most convincing in the film for you?
The most convincing, well, it's all about sort of the issues. The most convincing, there's a guy in Florida who's a mayor of a Cuban city called Hialeah, and I found him to be very compelling. He was very, very rational. He was the one who said, "Hey, don't you want to know who's in, you lock your door at night, don't you want to know who's in your, in your neighborhood, who's trying to get into your house?" He's a very rational guy, Julio. The people in Arizona, who are saying, people are traipsing through our property in the middle of the night, they're also very, very rational. People who are saying that Islam is not a real religion, less so. People who are saying that the Democrats are like, Gaddafi and want to chop your head off, less so.
And how did you decide who your interviewees would be? Because there's obviously a lot of conservatives you could choose from.
Sure. In the case of West Virginia, I had this idea that I wanted to talk to the Hatfields and McCoys and Matlon. It just seemed like such a sort of iconic American idea, and then when I actually was able to connect up with David Hatfield, he connected me to David McCoy, and things rolled from there. In most of the cases, we went to local Republican parties and said, who is people who would be comfortable on camera, who would be willing to do this, and who would be willing to talk, and I will give them a platform to talk, which I did. So I wanted to go to places that had different issues and we're different in terms of geography, and so I sort of spread it out from there.
And did you at any point reach out to Donald Trump's camp to see if he would do an interview?
No, I had no interest in that. The movie is very much not about them or him. The last political film I did, So Goes the Nation, really was about that, and it was all sort of political experts. This one I very much wanted to stay away from that.
What do you think would have happened, if Hillary had won? Would we still have this movie?
Sure, the movie would have been a cautionary tale. People would have
it still is.
It's exactly right. It still is. And I think that it would have been certainly a much more upbeat ending. And I think that I would have been very, very concerned at the ending about, does she have a mandate to govern, which I think would have been, and I think that would have been probably a, something that would have been brought up in the third act and the end of the film, which obviously this wasn't.
Do you think
it would have been filmed either way?
It probably wouldn't have been as interesting. It wouldn't have been as timely and important. I want to talk a little bit about the title American Chaos. Do you think that might offend people who perhaps were some of the subjects of your, interviews? And I think most rational people, regardless of what side they are on, will understand American Chaos, but it does have a real pejorative feel to it, and perhaps those who may be happy with the Trump presidency may not really appreciate the title.
Yeah, that's interesting. The people who I've talked to who are in the film know the title. They haven't said anything. I think they assume that the idea of chaos is not just chaos on their side, but chaos in terms of the whole country and the, you know, and the craziness and the yelling at each other that was, you know, part of the election. And in terms of whether they'll be happy with it or not, that's a really interesting question. I know that they're going to all be going to see it, and I'm sure that I'll be hearing. So I know that one group is actually, you know, going to like buy a whole theater out in a certain area and, you know, take all their friends. And so I'll be curious to see how that all goes.
Tell us about the release so we could talk a little bit about that so people who want to see it will know how to see it and when to see it.
Sure. The movie opens September 14th around the country. I think it's starting in about 25 different cities. Sony Classics is releasing the film, and it's going to be local in each city. I think it's the Sunset Lemley, I think, in Los Angeles, if that's right.
Lemley. Mm-hmm.
So that's where it's going to be. But around the country, it opens all at the same time, September 14th.
And do you have anything else lined up? Like, what's your next project going to be? Is it something political?
Yes, I have a lot lined up, actually. I finished a film that I produced called Old Man with the Gun, which is Robert Redford's final film. It's brilliant. It opens at the Telluride Festival. It opens September 28th around the country. I've actually produced a large film with Adam Sandler and Jennifer Aniston, which is a Netflix film. And I am directing a documentary right now, which I'm about two-thirds of the way through shooting, about August Wilson, our greatest African-American playwright who wrote Fences and many other things, has, in the aftermath of his death, they formed a monologue competition for disadvantaged youth all over the country who perform his monologues with the hopes of going to Broadway and performing it on Broadway. And that's about two-thirds of the way through shooting.
That sounds really interesting.
it's a competition film, very, very uplifting.
Yeah, it sounds
like this. And wonderful. And so I'm very excited. So I'm excited about all the things we're doing.
Well, there's a lot going on for you, Jim, and we wish you all the luck with American Chaos and its release and all of the other projects that you're currently working on. Keep up the good work, and we appreciate you being with us today on Gervie's Law.
Come back again.
Thank you. I appreciate your time. Thanks so much.
All right. Take care. So, Genevieve, wow, you just keep hitting home run after home run with these guests, and I really appreciate it because I don't get a chance on air often to thank you for all of the hard work you do as a producer for this show.
Well, I love the hosts. You and Carrie are great. I love the issues that we get to explore, and I feel like, you know, we're a great team, so thank you.
It is. It is a great team. I would have to agree with that because if I didn't, I'd be an idiot. Tell us a little bit about what's coming up in the future for Gervie's Law, some of the shows you're working on.
Wow, we have got some great shows lined up. Let's start with next week.
Yeah.
Robert Shapiro, O.J. Simpson's former attorney, is going to be on. He's got a big fundraiser coming up, and a lot of people don't know this, but in addition to being a lawyer, he runs a nonprofit that raises money for people who have substance abuse issues.
Right.
So I'm definitely looking forward to that.
And that's in the name of his son.
Yep, in the name of his son. Wow, what else is coming up? You know, 48 Hours was visiting us.
We got the Jose Baez interview about Aaron Hernandez, the inside scoop on Aaron Hernandez.
As well as Angelique Fawcett.
Angelique Fawcett on Nichelle Nichols.
The Star Trek.
Yeah.
Star Trek star.
The first kiss between an African-American and a white person on TV, which was William Shatner. And Nichelle Nichols, and we're going to talk to her friend, Angelique, about the fight that she's having right now
with her friend's conservatorship.
That's what it is. And that's coming up as well. So a lot of interesting stuff coming up. And if anyone ever has a story they want to get on Gervie's Law, an attorney that they want to hear about, a personality that they want to hear about, it, you know, someone like Jennifer Robinson, Julian Assange's attorney who was on today, how do they get a hold of you, Jen, and how can we make it happen?
Well, you can go to the Gervie's Law website, www.gervieslaw.com, or you can actually email me directly as well. And I don't mind sharing my email on air. Yeah, I don't mind, actually. It's gnwong@gmail.com. That way you know for sure I have the email. Looking forward to all of your comments.
All right. Genevieve, thanks so much for being with us, for jumping in at the last minute with Carrie being out. Appreciate it, and thanks for all of your hard work. Everyone out there, have a great week. We'll be back next week with Robert Shapiro on Gervie's Law.